If I truly lock eyes with this monster, I wasn't sure I would come out of the encounter in one piece. I didn't know who I would become or what my life would look like if I lost the fight. I reasoned it would be better for me to function through my dysfunction until I had the wherewithal to handle it, but now I was up against the clock. The weekend messages I gave to the church were built on personal openness and transparency, and I knew I couldn't hide what I was going through beneath the surface. I was trapped. As I stepped into the shower, I was exhausted, confused, and out of options. And yet, somewhere in my heart, I heard the whisper of a loving voice. It's okay not to be okay. In that moment, everything seemed to shift into slow motion, and my heart began to shift as well. Those whispered words were the divine key that released me from the shackles of fear and numbness. It's okay not to be okay. As the warm water washed over me, those gentle healing words washed through me. I let go of my need to have it all together and surrendered to a process I knew would lead me toward wholeness. I also knew it would require facing the monster within. A newfound vulnerability came over me, and I began to sob uncontrollably. For the first time, I allowed myself to feel the emotion I buried when Dad told me he'd made other plans for Father's Day. The monster that rose up in me that day was hurt, and its name well deserved. It's okay to not be okay. I let it all go and gave myself permission to cry. Standing in the shower that morning, I cried about the phone call with my dad, but it was actually a 30-year-old cry and long overdue. Somewhere along the way, I learned to stuff my emotions and to anesthetize the pain of rejection by telling myself I'm okay, even when I wasn't. The monster within was an accumulation of all the unprocessed feelings I buried over the years every time I felt rejected by my father. As I cried, my hurt erupted like a slow-motion volcano, and yet, as messy as it was, I felt a healing relief with each sob. We are never okay when we pretend that hurt doesn't hurt. Hurt always needs to be acknowledged and addressed. It doesn't just disappear, no matter how deeply we bury it or how much we try to convince ourselves we're okay in spite of it. When we fail to process our pain in a healthy way, it becomes ill-processed by default, deepening the damage of the original wound. That's what happens when the unhealthy layers of denial under which we bury our hurt stand in the way of our wholeness. What I experienced that morning in the shower was a cracking open of those layers. As my defenses crumbled, the light and hope of wholeness illuminated my pain and began to heal a wound I had been avoiding and denying for decades. Hurt, anger, and pride. I experienced a life-changing breakthrough that morning, not simply because I was able to identify and address the hurt living beneath the surface, but also because I discovered the unhealthy pattern that led me to repeatedly deny the pain. It's one thing to be sick and then get healed. It's another to recognize how you got sick in the first place so you can avoid getting sick again. As I began the process of healing, I discovered the unique relationship between hurt, anger, and pride, and how this destructive trio had worked aggressively against my wholeness and stifled my progress in life. Let me explain the connection. To begin, it's important to understand something about who we are beneath the surface. Your inner person, what I described in Chapter 2 as the real you, is the most delicate and sensitive part of you. Unlike your outer, physical self, your inner self can't be protected by layers of clothing. You can't bundle up your insides with the emotional equivalent of jackets, scarves, and caps to protect it from harsh environments. That means your inner person is wide open and subject to harm from any number of hostile elements in our world that threaten its wholeness. Three of the most common threats include being treated in a way that is debasing, being ridiculed with piercing and diminishing words, being unseen or unrecognized. All of these threats to wholeness have something in common. They are devaluing. And there is perhaps nothing more traumatizing to the human spirit than feeling devalued. It cuts to the core because God created human beings to be loved and valued. We're born with a fundamental need to be loved as is with no strings attached. We are desperate for it and at times will do anything to try to find that kind of acceptance and care. When we experience something that deprives us of the love and value we crave, the result is hurt, which is traumatizing to our inner person. Hurt is so traumatizing that most of us do everything in our power to avoid it. And if we can't avoid it, we try to manage it by transferring that pain into a secondary emotion, such as anger. While hurt is the primary emotion, anger arises in response to the hurt in order to help us distance ourselves somewhat from the pain. Anger is where we live when we are running from the reality of the hurt. In my case, the hurt that came from my father's rejection was anchored to a question, am I good enough? I couldn't face the reality of the hurt because I was afraid I'd have to answer that question. What if I wasn't good enough? That thought was unbearable, especially to a spirit that was already wounded. And so my inner defense mechanism kicked in, and the hurt became anger. The transition from hurt to anger is how that vulnerable inner person attempts to regain control after experiencing the shock of hurt. Anger is the perfect refuge because it takes the power away from the one who wounded us and places the narrative about the hurt within our own sphere of control. Anger puts every possibility of wrongdoing or inadequacy concerning the hurt away from ourselves and onto the one from whom the hurt came. The one who wounded is entirely at fault. The one who was hurt is entirely innocent. Although this emotional transfer to anger may offer temporary relief from the hurt, in the long run, it causes more damage, and here's why. When anger follows hurt, the anger is contrived. The true and primary feeling is hurt. Hurt will never be healed by anger. Being made whole after hurt requires an authentic encounter with the pain you're feeling. Burying and denying hurt only creates more dysfunction. Wholeness collaborates only with truth. He does not work in conjunction with dysfunctions we convince ourselves we need in order to remain functional. It takes courage and vulnerability to look hurt in the face and allow wholeness to not only reveal the truth to you, but lead you through the healing process. When we choose instead to shrink back from pursuing wholeness, we end up covering our hurt and anger with yet another layer, which is pride. Pride is perhaps the most problematic mindset because it tries to masquerade as healing. It mimics wholeness by claiming all is well. Pride convinces us to deny being hurt because, according to pride, hurt is something only the weak experience, and the weak is the last thing we ever want to be. We might even deny being angry because pride leads us to believe that being angry is a loss of control. And so we smile and say, I'm doing great, or I don't care, or it doesn't really matter, when in fact we aren't doing great, we do care, and it does really matter. In the process, we close ourselves off from the possibility of wholeness because our pride refuses to acknowledge that anything is broken. Pride is a tough layer to penetrate, but as I experienced in my own healing journey, when the wall of pride breaks down, unprecedented healing begins to flow. Safety and vulnerability. My healing began the moment my trusted friend asked me how the fishing trip with my father was shaping up. Up to that point, I was living in the lair and mindset of pride. When my father rejected the fishing trip, I was disappointed and hurt. Not wanting to acknowledge the hurt, I quickly moved to anger and then to pride. I was in denial and completely out of touch with what was going on inside me. It happened so seamlessly, so quietly beneath the surface, that I had no idea it had taken place. However, when my friend asked about the trip, my wall of pride was penetrated. Pride, although stubborn, can be penetrated and surrendered if we feel safe. Remember, in situations such as these, pride is a vain attempt to protect our inner person from pain. Deep down, we all want to be made whole, but we won't reveal our brokenness to people or environments that will abuse our vulnerability. However, if an environment is perceived as safe, our inner person has an opportunity to set aside pride. When we feel safe, we can respond to the rare opportunity to be authentic because we trust we will not be judged, diminished, or devalued. There was something about my friend that created enough sense of safety that my wall of pride cracked, and I was finally able to acknowledge that there was something broken beneath the surface. As I stood in the shower that Sunday morning, desperately grasping for whatever I could use to hide my vulnerability, my wall of pride crumbled. It's okay not to be okay. It was the voice of wholeness. I knew I was safe. Wholeness was giving me permission to be vulnerable and to trust that all my broken pieces could be put back together again, perhaps even better than before. And it's ironic that this encounter that required an inner nakedness happened in the shower, a place that requires an outer nakedness. Both the symbolism and reality of my breakthrough were mind-boggling. I was a changed man after that encounter. I went to church that morning and laid it all on the table. I was transparent about my experience with my father and the breakthrough that followed. That day, I preached a message about vulnerability that some have said is the most powerful message I have ever given. Afterward, scores of people with tears flowing down their cheeks flocked to the altar for prayer. Grown men and women let down their guard, becoming as open-hearted and vulnerable as young children. The entire congregation experienced the power of receiving permission to not have it all together. It was a beautiful exchange, brokenness for wholeness, and we all went home that day, not perfect, but undeniably better. As a church family, we were led farther up the mountain of our potential. My sermon title, which you already may have guessed, was, "It's Okay Not to Be Okay." I'm sure wholeness didn't mind me borrowing that phrase. As we continue this challenging ascent to wholeness, I invite you to pause for a moment and reflect. Consider the layers we discussed, hurt, anger, pride, and ask yourself this important question. Have I been honest with myself and others about hurt I have experienced? Take a moment and think about it. Do others accuse you of being angry? If so, is there some unprocessed hurt beneath the anger? Do you often feel the need to appear to have it all together? Do you smile and say you're okay when deep down you're not? All it takes is a willingness to be vulnerable, and your life can be changed. Be brave in this moment and take a real good look. As you do, remember this. Wholeness is with you. Part 2. The Truth Shall Set You Free. Chapter 4. Meet Brokenness. Since marrying my wife, Sarah, a Southern girl, I've picked up a few country sayings. I love how they pack so much wisdom into just a few words, like this one. Even a broken clock is right twice a day. Think about it. There's a whole world of wisdom in that simple statement. What it means to me is that just because something works some of the time doesn't mean it can be relied on all of the time. Even a clock we rely on for accuracy can be wrong, and if we look at it only at certain times, we'll have no idea it's broken. Unless we are paying close attention, the brokenness of the clock will elude us. And the same principle applies to our inner lives. Just because a few areas of our lives may appear to be working well, does not mean our lives are well. We have to pay close attention to our inner lives, or our brokenness will elude us. Up to this point, we've talked about the kind of things we tell ourselves that keep us from experiencing wholeness, but now it's time to take an even closer look at what lies behind all those statements, which is our brokenness. What's wrong with you? One of the things that intrigues me about brokenness is that it seems like only a small number of people consider themselves to be broken in any way. However, the majority of people who don't consider themselves broken will acknowledge that they aren't perfect and make mistakes. How is it that most people will admit to imperfection but reject the notion of being broken? Are mistakes and shortcomings not evidence of at least some degree of brokenness in our lives? If our mistakes do not come from our brokenness, then where do our mistakes come from? Are we like broken clocks, so content with being spot on twice a day that we are blinded to what our brokenness may be costing us other hours of the day? The answer seems obvious, and for me, that's the scary part. It's not what I've got worked out and operating well that keeps me up at night. It's what is yet to be made whole that concerns me. When Sarah and I were in the early months of our courtship, the time had come for me to meet her father to discuss my interest in his daughter. It was the first time Mr. Jakes and I had ever sat down together, and once my nervousness subsided, it proved to be a heartfelt and meaningful talk. After discussing a series of questions and concerns, which I presumed I had answered satisfactorily, we seemed to be winding down our conversation. But my soon-to-be father-in-law had masterfully waited until the end of our conversation to ask me his most important question. With a piercing gaze that reached right into my soul, Mr. Jake said, "Torre, I know what's right with you. That all looks good, but tell me, what's wrong with you?" It was a brilliant question, one I am certain to ask anyone seeking my blessing to marry one of our kids. In all my years, I had never been asked such a thing by anyone. Fortunately, it was a question I'd already learned to ask myself, so it wasn't hard to answer. "So tell me, what's wrong with you?" Could you have readily responded to Mr. Jake's question? How willing and able are you to acknowledge that there may be broken areas in your life? If you want to be whole, you have to understand, address, and ultimately surrender your brokenness on the altar of wholeness. And there is no shame in being broken. You didn't choose your brokenness. Your brokenness chose you. Small cracks of brokenness. We all come into this world with at least a crack when we are born. Those before us were born into brokenness, and those before them the same. The brokenness you inherit is not your fault, but it is very much your responsibility to overcome it. Why? Because if your brokenness is left unchecked, it will steal from you. Unacknowledged brokenness is like having a robber within, a thief intent on stealing the promising future you've been trying to lay hold of. When you take two steps toward wholeness, brokenness seeks to sabotage that progress by moving you two steps back. Here's another way to think of it. Brokenness is like being overtaxed in life. There is a legitimate amount of tax we all must pay to cover the cost of living in our country. But imagine finding out that you've been paying significantly more than you need to for years, even decades. Painful, right? That's exactly what brokenness does. It imposes a broken tax, a tax you wouldn't have to pay if you were whole in certain areas. Is it possible that brokenness in your life is costing you far more than you realize? What if brokenness is stealing from you at this very moment? What would you do if you discovered that peace, love, progress, and even finances were all going out the back door of your life because brokenness has been embezzling your blessings for years. The brutal truth? It is entirely possible. Brokenness is just as committed to your not reaching your mountaintop of potential as wholeness is to your getting there. So the question we have to ask ourselves is, if brokenness is so costly, why is it so challenging for us to acknowledge? In my view, it comes down to two things, pride and blind spots. Pride is what allows us to admit we aren't perfect, but prevents us from acknowledging brokenness. For the most part, imperfection is an acceptable norm in the human experience. You'll find the phrase, nobody's perfect, in everything from song lyrics and movie lines to social media posts and poor excuses from cheating lovers. Because imperfection is largely accepted, it escapes the requirement of change. It gives us an easy way out of our mistakes without the mandate for improvement. To be broken, however, is a different story. Brokenness requires fixing, and pride refuses to admit that there is anything at all to fix. Blind spots are just what they sound like, obstructions that keep us from seeing our own brokenness. One of the hardest things for us to see clearly and completely is ourselves. We are aware of most of what is in front of us, but little of what is within us. We all have an idea of who we are, but only from a limited perspective, our own. This predicament is similar to the blind spots we have with our physical eyes. Our eyes are in the front of our heads and enable us to see what is directly in front of us. We can turn our head to the left and to the right and up and down, which means our viewing range covers at best a 180-degree view. This means that at any given moment, there are another 180 degrees we are not seeing. Even with the best eyesight, there will always be blind spots, sometimes significant ones. Brokenness rarely makes a formal introduction, but rather hides and even thrives in our blind spots. What makes our brokenness even harder to detect is that we have learned how to function with dysfunction. It's like using a crutch for a broken foot. As long as you have the crutch, you can still get around. That doesn't mean your foot is any less broken, but you might convince yourself that it's fine because, hey, you're still getting from one place to another, right? But the more functional we are with our dysfunction, the greater our self-deception. Why? Because we equate being functional with being fine. That may work for a while, but not forever. One day, the painful truth that all is not well will bring everything to a screeching halt. From small cracks to chasms. As I mentioned earlier, we all come into this world with a crack or two, which is some degree of brokenness. We didn't choose it, but it is our reality. Then, as we live in the world, we acquire a few more cracks, and the ones we already have deepen, sometimes into painful chasms. And that is the definition of brokenness. It means to be divided or split from within. We might acquire these cracks and splits in any number of ways. Here are just a few. Generational brokenness. This is the brokenness we inherit from parents, grandparents, and even many generations before them. This could include domestic violence, alcoholism, or some other form of addiction. Because these issues were never addressed, they live on and perpetuate the cycle of brokenness from one generation to the next. Social brokenness. We live in a broken world, which means there is brokenness in our culture at large, the subcultures we are exposed to, and the social systems that shape the way we relate to one another. Examples include poverty, racism, and sexism. Personal brokenness. This is the brokenness we experience when we are devalued or traumatized. Examples include verbal, physical, and sexual abuse, as well as rejection and abandonment. All of these forms of brokenness complicate and deepen our foundational brokenness. When brokenness is allowed to reign, It accumulates in layers, brokenness on top of brokenness. And then things get really complicated because we inevitably attempt to heal our brokenness in ways that only produce more brokenness. Take, for instance, a young woman whose father never affirmed her value when she was a child. As she enters her teen years, she feels a deep hunger for male attention and validation. Her father's rejection created a wide crack beneath the surface, and now anything that resembles affirmation by a man feels like the healing she's so hungry for. She's aware that men notice her figure, and she begins to play to their attention. She wears clothes that accentuate her breast and bottom because it gets her more attention. The attention becomes like a drug, and she not only needs it, but needs more of it and stronger doses of it to get the same effect. She alters her strut to draw attention to herself and posts revealing and seductive photos on social media. Up to this point, it feels like she's been getting what she wants and needs, but now she's beginning to see there are complications that come along with the attention. The attention feeds her need for affirmation, but she knows that the men she's attracting don't want her for her. They only want her body parts. Her realization is a flash of truth that could lead her toward wholeness, but it's also a threat. She'd have to let go of vying for attention. Because she is so desperate to ease the pain of her brokenness, she exchanges the truth for the momentary filling of the void. Eventually, the stakes get higher. Now the men want not only to look, but also to touch. Not long ago, this would have been unthinkable to her. But her sense of self-worth has been gradually degraded with each compromise she has made for the attention. So she yields to one man's advances and now has offered not only her self-esteem, but also her body on the altar of brokenness. The result? More brokenness. Guilt and shame widen the gap that started as a crack of rejection. Now it is a wide chasm that only an experience with wholeness can truly heal. But it doesn't stop there. She feels so overwhelmed by pain and shame and guilt that she must find an escape from it all. Drugs and alcohol promise the relief she's looking for, which only piles on more layers of brokenness. Do you see how unacknowledged brokenness is robbing this young woman, and how her attempts to heal her brokenness on her own terms only make things worse? To one degree or another, the dynamics in her story are ones we all share, and the stakes are just as high for us. The sooner we recognize and acknowledge our brokenness, the sooner we can experience healing and wholeness. Recognizing brokenness. As I mentioned earlier, recognizing brokenness is challenging, especially when pride and blind spots get in the way, but it is entirely possible. I'm going to briefly walk through three steps you can take. If you put them into practice regularly, it will be very difficult for brokenness to hide from you. Step 1. Acknowledge that you are broken. This step takes humility and a commitment to self-examination. Set aside your pride and admit that you have blind spots. Say to yourself, although I may be functioning well in some areas, I won't use those as an excuse to avoid dealing with brokenness in other areas. This does not mean you have to beat yourself up or put yourself down. You need to think highly of yourself, just not so highly that you miss the brokenness that lurks low. When you acknowledge that you are broken, you are actually valuing yourself by eliminating any possibility of self-sabotage. You are putting the thief of brokenness on notice. No more stealing allowed. Step 2. Follow the pain. Where does your life hurt? Pain comes in many forms, including insecurity, envy, depression, anxiety, anger, loneliness, and low self-esteem. If you've been functioning with dysfunction for a long time, you may have become numb to the pain or think it's normal. But it's not normal, and you need to be healed. Don't turn a deaf ear to your inner person, the voice that says, "I'm hurting. This is hard. I need help." That's how you begin to develop the discipline of being self-aware. You listen and you acknowledge to yourself and to others when your inner person is experiencing discomfort or pain. Pain is a gift in this regard. Just as clues help detectives to solve crimes, pain points us to what needs to be healed. If we recognize pain and respond to it properly by tracing it to its source, we are well on the road to wholeness. New life will spring up where brokenness once lived. Step 3. Trust outside eyes. If you have blind spots, what do you need? Another set of eyes that can see what you cannot. Invite trusted friends to lend you their eyes. People close to you likely see things in you that you can't. No one wakes up in the morning and says, "Today I'm going to be an arrogant, selfish, insensitive human being." And yet we encounter people like this every day. It's easy to notice it in others, but it's difficult to recognize it in ourselves. So you need people in your life who will tell you the truth about what they see in you. Who should you ask? Begin by identifying someone you trust and respect. You know this person won't massage the truth or lie just to make you feel better, nor will they run you down. This person should also be someone who has nothing to gain by appeasing you and nothing to lose by offending you. You're not looking for a yes person. You're looking for a wholeness person. Actually, you're looking for a wholeness team because you need more than one person who can speak truth into your life. Here's the principle to remember. Wounds from a sincere friend are better than many kisses from an enemy. Proverbs chapter 27, verse 6, New Living Translation. Empower your friends by giving them permission to be brutally honest with you about what they see. If they say something you don't want to hear, don't resist it. That's what they are there for. They are giving you a gift. If you could see the hard and the ugly on your own, you wouldn't need them. Consider what they say and take it all in. It may sting for a moment, but it will create a lifetime of progress and keep the thief of brokenness behind bars. These are the basic initial steps to help you recognize your broken areas, but it's not a once-and-for-all process. If you want to pursue wholeness, you need to be working these steps all the time. None of us gets a lifetime pass on pride and blind spots. Once you discover where you are broken, keep the process going. Every step you take will bring you closer to being made whole. As someone who has worked these steps for a while now, allow me to give you a heads up. When the brokenness you didn't know you had is uncovered, you will likely have to battle off a mix of shame and pride. Shame over your weakness or failures will try to enlist pride as a covering. Remember how pride works? It wants you to deny it all, because if you can talk yourself out of being broken, there is nothing to feel any shame about. You can convince yourself that you were fine all along and go back to life as usual. But that would be a huge mistake and an obstacle on your path to wholeness. Don't be deceived. Don't take the pride bait. When shame and pride try to derail you, tell them you're not ashamed to be broken and send them on their way. Embrace the rare gifts of humility and vulnerability and let wholeness do what it does. And speaking of wholeness, let's talk about what happens once you recognize your brokenness. Surrendering to wholeness. I'm not going to sugarcoat the truth. Once brokenness in your life is uncovered, you're going to feel naked, exposed, and vulnerable. That's definitely not a comfortable feeling, and chances are you'll blush and scramble like Adam and Eve trying to find fig leaves to hide their privates. But let me say it again. There is no shame in any part of the process of getting whole. This is where the God of wholeness, the God who is wholeness and who designed you to be whole, steps in and provides the covering of a beautiful healing process. Wholeness is drawn to our brokenness and covers us with love and affirmation. If wholeness could sit right down next to you, I imagine you'd hear something like this. In spite of your brokenness, I love you. In fact, I am the one who has orchestrated the uncovering. I don't expose you to shame you. I reveal your brokenness to you in order to heal you. I know what the completely whole version of you looks like. And I am always loving you into the person I created you to be. I am the master potter, and to me you are valuable clay. I know exactly what you are supposed to look like in the end. So I put you on my will, and I shape you and mold you. It is difficult for me to make you whole if you stiffen up or become brittle with pride. This keeps me from bringing out the beautiful details of your divine design. But if you will surrender, if you will relax like soft clay and trust my heart and my vision for you, I will fashion you into something so beautiful that you will wish you had surrendered to me sooner. Wholeness works only with humility and vulnerability. You can't be proud and whole at the same time. Wholeness loves truth and honesty. Wholeness doesn't see brokenness as weakness, just a reality. In fact, the more willing you are to admit your brokenness, the closer you are to being made whole. You'll know something very powerful is happening in your life when you can boldly say, "I am broken." Go ahead and say it now, out loud. Don't be afraid. Just say it. Three words. I am broken. There's nothing to be ashamed of. This is a part of the process. The sooner you can say, "I am broken," the sooner you'll be able to say, "I am whole." Becoming whole takes work, but you are worth it, and you will never be alone in the process. Wholeness is with you in every step. Wholeness will guide you, affirm your value, and cover the process on your way to progress. Regardless of how broken your start may have been, wholeness will see to it that your finish is breathtaking. There's more work to do, but because you've taken the time to walk through this process, you're already off to a great start on your journey. So let us continue on from brokenness to wholeness. Chapter 5. The Cracked Mirror. I'm not a big fan of amusement parks these days, but there was a time in my life when I lived for them. As a California kid, I loved going to Disneyland and Knott's Berry Farm every year. I especially enjoyed one particular attraction called the Funhouse. Remember the Funhouse? The one filled with all the crazy mirrors? Some mirrors distorted your image so you look wide and bloated or tall and skinny. Others enlarged or shrunk the size of your head while keeping your torso the same size, creating an awkward cartoon-like figure. Still others made you look like a clown with huge feet or shrunk the space between your eyes so you looked like a Martian. These twisted images always made me and my friends laugh. I also found them fascinating because they weren't a total fabrication, just distortions of our actual image that created a skewed perspective we found amusing. In my efforts to help people find wholeness, I've observed a striking similarity between the funhouse mirrors and brokenness. When a person is broken, their perceptions are skewed and distorted. They don't see things plainly, and it's no laughing matter when your life mirror is distorted or cracked. In fact, the only things you get out of that kind of crazy mirror are limitations, unhealthy expectations, and more brokenness. In the previous chapter, we explored how brokenness operates and the harm it causes when it goes unacknowledged. Now we need to consider the residual effects that brokenness has in our lives, perhaps the most significant of which is a distorted perspective of both reality and ourselves. As we pursue wholeness, it's very important that we not neglect the issues lingering in the wake of our brokenness. It is possible to be healed and yet still need to mend the cracks and chasms that brokenness created in your life. We'll discuss this in more detail later in the book, but for now, let's focus on the cracked and distorted mirrors that brokenness leaves us with. Your inner mirror. Each of us has what I call an inner mirror. The inner mirror helps us to interpret and understand what we see in our world, which then determines how we engage the people we relate to and the circumstances we live in. When that mirror is clear and healthy, it reflects accurate images of self, others, and the world around us, and those images enable us to respond in healthy and productive ways. However, when that mirror is distorted, we live with limitations and flawed expectations, which then attract and produce unhealthy outcomes. When I was a little boy, between 5 and 7 years old, I routinely had nightmares about someone trying to harm me or my mother. I had great anxiety about something bad happening, and I never really felt safe. If it was just 5 minutes past my mother's normal time to arrive home from work, I began to panic. Things got so bad that my mother took me to see a psychologist. Although it was great to have a safe place to process my emotions, the fear itself never went away. As I grew older, I had a very difficult time feeling safe no matter my environment. There were, in fact, real dangers in the inner city neighborhood where we lived, but even when we later moved to a safer neighborhood in the suburbs, I still felt the need to be vigilant and cautious. Somehow, somewhere, as a little boy, I received a crack in the part of my inner mirror that reflected the safeness of my world. For years, I tried to go back in time looking for clues about what had distorted my inner mirror and found nothing until one day I remembered. I was about 5 years old when my mom gave me a brand new bike. I'll never forget it. It was shiny red and so much fun to ride. It was my first bike, and I loved the sense of freedom it gave me. I even had the courage to venture beyond our apartment parking lot and ride to the convenience store around the corner from our home to get a snack. I pulled up to the store, laid down my bike just outside the entryway, and walked in. After buying a few sugary items, I walked back outside to get on my bike and ride home. I had been in the store for only a few minutes, but my bike was gone. It was a surreal moment as I stood there trying to figure out how my bike could be there one moment and then be gone the next. I looked down the street in one direction and then in the other. There was no bike in sight. I was devastated. I felt like the greatest evil had just happened to me. Today I know better, but to my 5-year-old self, things couldn't have been any worse. It was an experience that shook my young world, and I was traumatized. That day, something within me changed, and from that moment, the world no longer felt safe. Instead, it felt colder and darker, even though I knew the incident happened during the day. Oddly, in my memory, I recall it as happening at night. It had become nighttime for me, and the carefree, sunny days of my childhood were gone. This was the stone that cracked my inner mirror of safety, and it distorted my perspective of the world. It took decades and cost me years of peace before I could identify what had distorted my worldview on safety. Your inner mirror determines how you perceive your world, yourself, others, and your circumstances. But it's important to note that a single incident may not distort how you see everything. For example, having my bike stolen didn't change the way I perceived myself. It didn't even necessarily change the way I saw others. What that crack in my mirror affected most was how I saw the world around me. Life itself was no longer safe. And I carried that perspective with me until I experienced wholeness and was healed from that brokenness and fear. Perhaps you need to search your history for experiences that may be at the root of your fears. For me, it was a stolen bike, but for you, it could be something different that caused you to feel unsafe. There is a stone for every crack in your mirror, and pursuing wholeness requires that you find it. A cracked worldview. There are two common experiences that will almost always skew the way you see life. One of those, as in my case, is an unexpected loss. Prior to the theft of my bike, I was innocent. I had no reference point for loss. The world I lived in was safe and free from threat of harm. Little Teray didn't think twice about leaving his bike unlocked and unattended, but the unexpected loss of my bike stole my innocence. It cracked the image I had of the world as a safe and healthy place. You might be thinking that I was naive and that the world, in fact, is not a safe and healthy place. I have two responses to that. The first is that maybe your mirror is cracked too. I bet you weren't expecting that. It's funny, but could also be true. The second thought is that although there are dangers in the world, there are also safe and healthy places here. In spite of the evil that exists, great things are happening all the time. The problem with having a distorted mirror is that a marred and negative worldview keeps us from seeing the peace, joy, and freedom that is available to us. Disappointment is another experience that distorts our perspective on the world. Have you ever been let down? I mean, in a big way. You interviewed for the job, moved up through the hiring process, nailed the final interview, and prayed to get it, only to learn they hired someone else. You studied for a major exam, pulling all-nighters and giving it your best effort, yet still ended up with a poor grade. You had a dream-come-true relationship, the kind you thought would last forever, only to watch it crash and burn, leaving you in a daze, wondering what in the world just happened. There are so many things in life that disappoint us, from the loss of a loved one to life taking an unforeseen turn. Nothing robs us of an optimistic worldview quite like disappointment. Disappointments are crushing experiences, and they rarely leave us unscathed. When losses and disappointments happen to you, if you don't process them properly, it creates a distortion on your inner mirror that changes both the way you see life and what you expect from life. This type of brokenness brings in an element of fear, fear that the same thing, or worse, might happen again. Fear then holds you hostage. When you're afraid of the unknown, you don't have the courage you need to take the legitimate and necessary risks required to grow and achieve. This is a debilitating brokenness that limits what is possible for you because it blinds you to all the good available in each moment. Then things get worse because once you expect negative outcomes, you begin to attract them. Your negative expectations create a subconscious sabotaging effect. Now you are no longer drawn to good things because you are obsessed with bad ones. Even if a good thing presents itself, your cracked mirror keeps you from seeing it. Your distorted perspective skews the reality of good into something that will inevitably turn bad. And when you allow your disappointment to shape your expectations, you end up being disappointed over and over again. It's a terrible cycle, one I know well. Little Thérèse's unsafe worldview later became teenage Thérèse's fear of a premature death. I remember very sobering remarks I made at the birthday party my family threw for me when I turned 18. I said I felt grateful and blessed to have made it this far. All these years later, the words, "this far," nearly bring me to tears. How sad it is for any young person to feel like merely surviving to 18 is something remarkable. And how much sadder still for a young person to be robbed of the belief that good things await them. Although I had experienced some misfortune by that point, if I had tallied up all my experiences, I would have realized that I had experienced far more reasons to be optimistic and hopeful about my life. But my cracked mirror wouldn't allow me to see life that way. The signs indicating I had a bright future were all around me, but it would take time before I could recognize them. And yet, even in that darkness, there was always a tiny flicker of hope beneath the surface. In fact, I found that people who have suffered a great deal, even the most cynical, often still have a faint ray of hope that things could be different for them. It might be a dream suppressed by fear, something they tried to argue against inwardly or explain away based on past disappointments, yet it still peeks through. What these individuals don't realize is that the hope that continues to emerge in them is evidence that the God of wholeness is inviting them to a better reality. The first ray of hope I saw appeared when I was 12 and bused out of the inner city to a private school in the suburbs. Many of the children there had grown up in environments that were free from the kind of losses and disappointments that had cracked my mirror. Although they likely had other fears and issues, these young people weren't worrying about dying early. They didn't live in fear of being murdered in gang crossfire. Even though their reality and view of the world was different from mine, the freedom I witnessed in them began to rub off on me. I began to believe that maybe my life could be different after all. Each day I got on the bus in one reality and was dropped off at school in a completely different reality. The bus didn't come all the way into my neighborhood, but stopped just outside of it. From there, we took a 25-mile journey through neighborhoods that gradually improved until we reached our destination. Today, I see that bus ride as a metaphor that demonstrates something about how experiencing wholeness heals a cracked and distorted inner mirror. Let me explain. The experience of wholeness is the equivalent of the bus ride that carries us from one reality to another. It takes us from the reality of fear, past hurts, pessimism, and limitations to the reality of safety, peace, optimism, and infinite possibility. But before you can even get on the bus, you have to be willing to find and follow that faint ray of hope within you. You have to believe that your life can be different. You have to believe that the ray of hope within is the voice of wholeness, and if you follow, he will lead you into a new and better life. Hope is what gets you out of your neighborhood of limitations and to the bus stop. That's the first step. Then wholeness pulls up to pick you up. That's right. Not only is wholeness the ray of hope that guided you to the bus stop, but wholeness is also the bus. As you ride on the bus of wholeness, you begin to notice how your environment is gradually changing. It doesn't happen all at once, but little by little, step by step, you begin to feel safer, more peaceful, and soon you arrive in the state of optimism where you begin to believe that all things are possible. Wholeness is the voice, wholeness is the vehicle, wholeness is the journey, and wholeness will be your destination. Once I got on the bus, I began to see life more clearly. Wholeness helped me to understand that yes, there is evil in the world, but there is much more goodness, and that goodness had been protecting me my entire life. He explained that I had focused only on the things that went wrong, not on the far more numerous things that went right every single day. Wholeness taught me that things will not always go as planned in this life, but not to fret. With him, I could overcome even the worst of circumstances. Wholeness taught me that sometimes the miracle is not in being free from a difficult time, but in being sustained through that difficult time. Wholeness taught me a lot on that bus, and I still enjoy riding it today. After I had been on the bus for years, the bondage caused from my fear of dying young was healed. That healing freed me to expect and embrace all that wholeness had lined up in my path. Maybe you see the world as I once did, or perhaps you feel stagnated by past hurts or disappointments. If you know your view of life is distorted and you want to find the courage and hope to dream again, the good news is that you can. The next step is learning how to recognize and take control of the narratives in your life. Embracing the narrative of a healthy self-image. There is almost always a correlation between the specific circumstances that caused our brokenness and the damage it did to our inner mirror. An individual who experiences a devaluing circumstance, verbal abuse, rejection, abandonment, will likely struggle with a poor self-image. If there is a crack in your mirror of self-perception, something in your past or present has created that crack. If you want to be whole, to develop and maintain a healthy image of self, you need to understand how to cultivate that healthy image. And nurturing that kind of new self-perception begins with the stories you tell yourself. We all have what I like to call a storyteller. Your storyteller is the inner mechanism that tells you what is right or wrong about you. What your storyteller communicates, you almost automatically believe. Your storyteller tells you who you are, defines your value, and determines what you can or cannot do. There are many factors that shape the voice and tone of your storyteller. Your storyteller has a personality, and that personality is usually a hodgepodge of authoritarian voices you've encountered throughout your lifetime. Your storyteller might sound like your parents or your teachers, your sports coach or a religious leader, your boss or a trusted friend. Regardless of whose voice your storyteller mimics, it regulates your perceptions, and your perceptions are what become your reality. In life, You aren't who you are. You are who you think you are. For this reason, we must not only be aware of how our self-narrative shapes our reality, but also be diligent to ensure that our self-narrative is being shaped by wholeness rather than brokenness. Cultivating a healthy self-image is about taking control of the narrative of your life and being diligent to question who the voice of your storyteller is at any given moment. Is my storyteller affirming me in my abilities or casting doubt and disbelief about what I am trying to accomplish? Is the voice of my storyteller encouraging me and cheering me on in life, or is it degrading me and causing me to always second-guess myself? Does my storyteller magnify everything it believes is wrong with me, or does it assure me of my competence, value, and worth? You cannot trust your storyteller, rely on your self-perceptions, until you are sure who the real narrator is. Wouldn't it be a shame if the voice that drives your self-image today is actually the voice of someone or something that wounded you yesterday? Sadly, I know exactly what that's like. There was a time in my life when I wouldn't even have dreamed of allowing anyone outside of my family to throw me a party. Although I was popular throughout my school and college years and had scores of friends and associates, the idea of being celebrated by my friends was unthinkable to me. It wasn't that I was particularly modest or shy. The root issue was that I was afraid no one would show up. What's fascinating when I think about it today is that even if only a fraction of my friends had come, it still would have been a well-attended party. But there was something wrong with my storyteller. My storyteller said nobody cares about you enough to show up at a party. You'll be sitting there by yourself. Save yourself the humiliation. No parties allowed. I wish I could tell you that I detected the crack in my mirror, fixed it, and threw myself a wild party to prove my storyteller wrong. But that's not what happened. However, what actually occurred became the catalyst for my healing. Several friends threw me a surprise party that was a massive hit and that we would talk about for years. Why was my storyteller so afraid of the idea of having a party? I eventually traced my fear back to something that happened to me when I was 9 years old. My mother and I had just moved to the Los Angeles area from Northern California, and I had to enroll in a new school. It was September, the beginning of the school year, and I had not yet made any friends. I was also experiencing a slight case of culture shock because my new inner-city surroundings were much different than what I was used to. In an attempt to help me make friends, my mother decided to throw me a birthday party. I didn't know who was or wasn't invited, but what I remember very vividly is that no one, I mean nobody, showed up. As you can imagine, I was devastated. Come on, nobody? That was a situation and a memory I wanted to quickly put behind me, so I buried it. Can you imagine how failing to process such an experience would affect a 9-year-old psyche? What I couldn't have known at the time was that this buried memory would be resurrected in the narrative of my storyteller. What I told myself at the time shaped my self-perception for many years to come. There is something wrong with me. I'm not worth celebrating. My life hardly matters to anyone. What devastating thoughts to have in my formative years. The result? Decades later, a grown man's self-perception and self-narrative were still being shaped by the wounds and disappointments of a 9-year-old boy who had yet to experience wholeness. As I've pursued wholeness, I've learned how to examine and qualify all of my apprehensions in life. In that healing process, I realized that my fear of being celebrated by friends was not only unhealthy, but unfounded. In fact, I would later find out that through some logistical mishap, the invitations to my childhood party were never sent. The truth was that no one was ever invited, but the narrative of my brokenness convinced me that no one thought I mattered. Just as good journalism requires fact-checking and verifying the source of information before publishing a story, developing and maintaining a healthy self-image requires verifying the source of your inner storyteller. Your life is far too valuable and your potential far too great to allow it to be shaped by any narrator but wholeness. Wholeness has a perspective about who you are, what you can overcome, and who you will become. When the voice of wholeness shapes your narrative, your self-perceptions will be uplifting and inspiring. This doesn't mean that wholeness won't correct you when you're living outside your purpose and potential. Wholeness loves you too much to let you fall short of those. But with every correction, there will always be an arrow pointing up and a hand to lift you up. Wholeness brings healthy perspectives to situations in your life that once brought you pain. Remember, unprocessed pain will always be ill-processed pain. Until you invite wholeness into your painful areas to unmask the lies and guide you to the truth, you will default to the wrong storyteller, the wrong self-perceptions, to a wrong view of reality. And all of these wrongs have consequences, not only for your own life, but also for your relationships. Charging people today for the sins of others yesterday. How we see others is often a reflection of how we see ourselves. However, our perceptions of others can also be a reflection of our experiences with previous others. An inner mirror cracked by a painful experience with people in our past can greatly distort how we see others today. Just as it's important to have a healthy self-image, it's also important to have a healthy perspective on other people. Why? Because healthy relationships are a vital part of a healthy life. You can't ascend your mountain of potential while dragging the weight of damaged relationships behind you. You also can't achieve your potential alone. To become whole, to mature, and become the highest version of yourself, you need to see and relate to others without distortions. It is possible that you might be charging someone in your life today for the sins of someone else from yesterday. Is there a chance that you are falsely accusing an innocent person of a crime someone else